WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Studios. Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Leah Carter.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017.
I think we all gain insight and knowledge from people who've had a little more life experience, you know, to get some perspective, and that's something younger people obviously lack.
As many college students plan their exits from Bloomington this week, we hear about a dilemma many students face when they first start at IU. That's coming up later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, healthcare thieves on a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The Monroe County Democratic Party is voicing frustration with Governor Eric Holcomb's signing of an anti-solar energy bill, Senate Bill 309. Holcomb signed the bill yesterday. The chair of the local Democratic Party, Mark Fraley, says the new legislation is another attack on Monroe County's local control.
There are areas in which Bloomington is making a lot of progress, whether it's on housing or sustainability, the environment. And these are areas that are being quashed by the legislature. Bloomington here, we've made a lot of progress in trying to create incentives for families and businesses and churches to install solar panels on their facilities as well as housing. And every step of the way, the state legislature is telling us that we cannot be incubators of progressive policy ideas locally.
Senate Bill 309 will eventually end net metering, which allows solar power customers to sell extra electricity back to the grid at a retail rate. Net metering helps make solar energy affordable for many customers. Fraley says he believes the legislation is at least partly the result of influence from Indiana's large utility companies, which rely mostly on fossil fuels. The state's utility companies contributed more than $1 million to legislators last year.
It's clearly the case that the major energy lobbies were strongly behind SB 309, and there's certainly something that they really fear about consumers taking some power into their own hands and being able to purchase clean, renewable sources of energy.
Now, the scaling back of net metering won't begin to take place until July of 2022. It will affect new solar users after that date. While the legislation makes it more difficult for households to generate solar power, industry experts say they expect large utility companies will increase their generation of solar energy, which has become cheaper in recent years.
Seven Oaks Classical School is pushing back after a local group filed a lawsuit seeking to have the school's charter revoked. The federal lawsuit was filed last week by Monroe County's branch of the Indiana Coalition for Public Education. Seven Oaks responded with a statement suggesting the citizen group filed the lawsuit because enrollment at Seven Oaks could increase next year, pulling more students from local school corporations. Seven Oaks Charter School that gets public funding, although its charter was granted by a private religious college in northern Indiana. The school also suggests that the public education group purposely filed the lawsuit at the end of the Indiana legislative session to prevent lawmakers from taking action to protect the charter school. A member of the Seven Oaks School Board, Terry English, said the school is preparing to defend itself in court.
We're in the process of attempting to locate counsel who's versed in this area of the law to assist us in answering the complaint. We just received a service of process on it earlier this week, so there's a number of weeks that we have to actually formally respond with the court.
Some say the lawsuit could cause parents and students to become wary of attending the school. English says the school has a plan to keep the public aware of their future plans.
We intend to remain open, and we intend to fight vigorously against this lawsuit. We believe that we complied with the law, and we want our parents of our current students and the parents of prospective students to know that we will vigorously contest this in the federal court system.
The Seven Oaks School Board was rejected twice when it asked for a charter from the Indiana Charter School Board. Eventually, the school received a charter from Grace College. The federal lawsuit is seeking to revoke the charter, partly because Grace College is a private religious school. Opponents of Seven Oaks say a religious school should not be able to approve a school that receives public funding.
The city of Bloomington is taking another step towards developing a proposed tech park downtown. At their meeting this week, the city's Redevelopment Commission heard from architects and designers about their plans to renovate Dimension Mill, a city-owned building near the Showers building. The presentation to the Redevelopment Commission was attended by city staff members and designers hired by the city. The meeting, at which staff members presented their proposed redesign of Dimension Mill, was the first of three meetings to be held before the commission is asked for approval. Craig McCormick of the Indianapolis-based architecture firm Blackline Studios presented plans to remodel the brick industrial building into rentable venues that could be used by entrepreneurs.
So the program for the inside is really just that. It's the BEDC will have some space in there. There'll be a couple of additional offices that we make for the concierge and the people who will manage the actual space itself. And then, as you can see in the floor plan, really just studio space and kind of collaborative work areas, along with a couple of little feature areas, one classroom and one room that's going to be devoted to like video editing and blog, video blogging type of space.
McCormick presented Blackline Studios plans to add a steel walkway outside the second floor and the design of a large steel girder around the entrances to the building.
So again, at the south end, we're proposing this steel frame that sort of just signifies the entrance with some characters kind of describing the mill up above it. And then through the whole length of that side on the upper level, a steel walkway, which is kind of an outdoor space that will accompany a cafe area on the inside.
Staff members and designers said they expect to be back to present finalized budget items to the Redevelopment Commission May 15th and would ask the commission for final approval on June 5th. Redevelopment Commission meetings are open to the public.
The Bloomington Utilities Service Board approved a $40,000 cost overrun for a roofing project at one of its service garages. Project manager Mike Hicks said this week that the increased cost for the roof replacement was due to weather conditions during January's installation of the new roof. Hicks also told the board that more of the roof was damaged than staff had previously expected.
When I arrived at around 9 a.m., I didn't get up too early because I thought we were just tearing roof off. So I arrived around 9, and they had removed about 1/4 of the 18,000 square feet of roofing on our garage structure. And the superintendent came to me and said, you know, what are we going to do? Because this is too wet to apply our fully adhered membrane system that we specified.
Hicks asked the board to approve the release of $110,711 to roofing contractor New Tech Systems. The original bid of the project approved in September was $69,640. Board member Jason Banich asked Hicks if there was any procedure in place to look at where things went wrong.
At the end of the day, I mean, we've got a change order that's a 58% increase.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, you know, we have had this happen to us on some big projects as well in my real job. One of the things that we've started doing that has been very helpful to us is kind of doing autopsies on these after the fact. You know, mm-hmm. What could we have done differently? What could we have changed? How could we have looked at? Do we go through that process here after something like this happens?
Staff told Bannock that they informally reviewed cost overruns at their working sessions. Hicks told the board that he was able to renegotiate the price per square foot of roofing materials with the contractor in order to lower the cost of re-roofing the entire building, adding that staff had originally estimated that the project would cost around $120,000. Assistant Director for Finance at the City of Bloomington Utilities Efrat Pfefferman said that while procedures are in place to mitigate major increases in project costs, the roofing project's cost overruns were the result of decisions that had to be made in the moment.
It was really the decisions were made in the moment of, you know, exposed roof, and we didn't have the estimate or the numbers on what all that amounted to until we had plunged forward in proceeding and wrapping up that work. There's an exposed roof.
The board approved the release of funds to pay for the project's cost overrun.
Governor Eric Holcomb has signed a bill that will bring Indiana's pre-kindergarten pilot program to an additional 15 counties and increase its funding. Indiana's pre-kindergarten pilot program is called On My Way Pre-K. According to the program's annual report, it allows for low-income children to enroll in the program a year before kindergarten for free. It has been offered in Allen, Jackson, Lake, Marion, and Vandenberg counties since January 2015. Indiana Institute of Working Families Policy Analyst Aaron Macy said there has been positive feedback from the five counties that started the program in 2015.
We've seen preliminary data from the five counties and the families that have been served that indicate that not only are the children benefiting academically in terms of their preparedness for kindergarten, but also that family members are able to add work hours, go back to school, or even change jobs as a result of having this support.
The bill to extend On My Way Pre-K was authorized by State Representative Robert Boehning. In an interview with Fox 59, he said the goal of the program is for low-income kindergarten students to reach the same achievement level as higher-income students. Macy said though the program will benefit families academically, there is a financial burden.
There's still a really strong need for help with pre-kindergarten expenses. It's a very expensive investment for families, averaging close to $7,000 a year, and that's just not affordable for many families in the state. The solution would be a much larger investment in pre-K. Advocates this year were hoping for, I think, on the order of $50 million invested.
The new legislation will increase funding for the state's pre-K program by $10 million per year. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Leah Carter. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
In today's WFHB Community Report, we hear from Indiana University senior Tristan Fitzpatrick. Fitzpatrick came out as gay when he was 15, but found that he had no gay role models to look up for guidance and support. Now, that changed, however, when he came to IU and met Doug Botter, director of the LGBTQ Culture Center at IU Bloomington. It was through Botter that Fitzpatrick found a mentor, and in college he also began to learn about how the AIDS crisis created a mentorship vacuum for young gay men today. This story airs courtesy of a partnership between WFHB and a journalism class at the IU Media School taught by Amy Gastelum.
I was with him when he died, and it was very hard because the father, who under other circumstances would have been the pastoral presence in that room, was just sitting in a corner. I remember just sort of dying himself. He just didn't know what to do. So he was ashamed that his son had AIDS. He was obviously grieving deeply that his son was dying. He was a beautiful man. He was just very attractive and a good person. And it was a horrible experience.
Doug Botter's friend, Brian, passed away in 1987 from AIDS. If he was alive now, he would be in his late 60s, around Doug's age.
And at his funeral, I was not allowed to mention AIDS. That was, you know, that was really difficult. There were a number of gay men in the audience because he apparently was very popular. And their presence was so obvious, but we couldn't mention the fact that Brian was gay. So there was a sadness beyond the issue of death and disease. There was a sadness of this living a lie.
Because really so much of LGBT activism was just focused on staying alive for the most part back in the 80s. Would you agree with that or not?
Yes, I would. And because I'm trying to think what date it would have been, probably 85.
My first week of college, I didn't know what to do. I was on my own. The ground was shaky beneath my feet. I went to the GLBT student support office on campus for help. It was there that I met Doug. I knew the moment we talked about the Robin Williams comedy The Birdcage that we would get along. Soon, I depended on his advice as a mentor. He helped me feel less afraid to be gay in a world that demanded neat, straight lines of sexuality. Before coming to college, I always felt a little afraid in South Central Indiana to be a queer man because of Matthew Shepard. Shepard was killed in Laramie, Wyoming in 1998. Following his death, I watched news reports with my family in a suburb of Indianapolis about his parents lobbying for hate crime legislation in 2007. I was 12 years old. The fields around my house and my school looked a lot like the wheat fields in Laramie. My parents loved me, but they didn't know how to talk to me about being gay. Watching those reports, I felt a chill inside my chest and moved down my arms and up my throat. Maybe there was nowhere safe to be gay.
I think we all gain insight and knowledge from people who've had a little more life experience. And many people get that from their parents, but then you go through a certain stage in life where your parents are your enemy, or at least they're not all that smart. And so I think many people turn to coaches, pastors, rabbis, neighbors, or even grandparents or something, people with a little more life experience, and to get some perspective. And that's something younger people obviously lack.
I came out of the closet at 15. I'm now 21. While both my parents accepted me, I still wished I had role models to look up to who were guys that happened to be gay. I needed gay role models to teach me how to survive. I didn't know how to protect myself from bullies who hated that I was different. I didn't know how to have safe sex with a guy I cared about. I didn't know how to live in a world that was so, so different from me. I was clicking through the Life magazine photo archive my first year of college when I saw the picture. It was taken in 1990, 5 years before I was born. In it, a gay man named David Kirby is on his deathbed, surrounded by family members. His body, ravaged by AIDS, was nothing more than a pale skeleton. If he had lived, Kirby would be 57 years old today. That's when I knew. There's not a lot of gay men in their golden years because of the AIDS crisis.
Became up close and personal during that time. And I think at some level, staying alive was the issue. It really was.
In total, almost 660,000 people in the United States have died because of AIDS. Most of them were queer men. If these men, like Doug's friend, had lived, they would be role models for young queer men who were teased and mocked for their gayness, or, like Matthew Shepard, who were killed because of it. Shepard was my age when he was killed in 1998. He was targeted because he was gay. He was my age. My age. In another lifetime, I could have been him. Just saying those words draws chills over my body. Mentorship, especially for young queer people, is a lifeline. It is a connection to something that is greater than ourselves.
Mentorship is sort of a cyclical thing or a circular thing. And to think of people who maybe I provided some support for, in turn, returned the favor.
Doug is right. When we mentor others, we live on in the advice we share with them. And, in turn, the cycle of survival continues thanks to that mentor. Because the individual survives, the community does, too.
That story by IU senior Tristan Fitzpatrick is courtesy of a partnership between WFHB and a journalism class at the IU Media School taught by Amy Gastellum.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4100. 4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
If you're listening to this, you're interested in healthcare. Well, we all are. We all have these bodies we carry around with us, and they all get older. The amount of money floating around in the healthcare field might conservatively be described as ginormous. And that's not surprising when a brand new neurosurgeon can command a starting salary of $750,000 a year. The bad news, and you were expecting this, right, is that the amount of fraud in the healthcare area is almost equally ginormous. Medical identity theft is way up and rising fast. Scammers use your insurance account or Medicare account to see a doctor, pay for drugs, sometimes on forged prescriptions, buy medical equipment, and file false insurance claims. And you suddenly find your benefits maxed out or your account suspended just when you need it the most. The chances of this happening to you have gone way up, too. Over 4 billion personal data records were stolen by hackers in 2016 alone. If thieves start stealing your benefits, about all you can do to catch them is keep your own records. Insurance companies send you a written notice when you use the policy. It's called an EOB, Explanation of Benefits. If you get one and haven't filed a claim, or if you don't recognize everything on it, contact your insurance company right away. Something else that's gone way up is the risk of buying medicines online. A lot of people get their prescriptions filled online from Canada because their equivalent of our Food and Drug Administration, Health Canada, is equally strict. But our FDA just announced that they've found that 95%, almost all, of the medicines sold on the web which claim to be Health Canada approved are nothing of the kind. They come from many countries, including places where regulations are a joke. Sometimes they aren't the same medicine at all. If you're buying meds online from a Health Canada-approved source, better check them out with Health Canada. And the Federal Trade Commission recently warned about fake news websites selling medicines, real fakes, where the site itself is just as fake as the news. They look just like major news stories on established, trusted websites, but they're the modern version of the snake oil salesman's pitch. They make false claims and include phony endorsements. A so-called brain booster drug claimed endorsements by Stephen Hawking and Anderson Cooper, who both denied it. Be very wary of medications and so-called dietary supplements, claiming to affect a wide range of problems, full of heart-rending personal testaments, claiming quick fixes, using words like all natural, new discovery, and miracle cure. Anything that claims to cure cancer is bogus, or saying someone is trying to suppress their wonderful offering. That's a lie every time. One thing's sure, it's very unhealthy to get scammed. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You're listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford, Taylor Green, and Sheila Raghavendran, along with Wes Martin for Cats Week in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Tristan Fitzpatrick.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Leah Carter. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.